This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the second Japan Baseball Weekly podcast of the year. It's for the week of February 6th. I'm John Gibson, and I'm with my friend and partner, Jim Allen, on a Friday night in Japan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Not quite as good as your comeback there, but I'm doing well.
Yeah, well, setback is always a preview of a comeback. So here we go. I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're back. I hope you all enjoyed the panel discussion.
Oh my goodness. Well, we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, that was fantastic. I can't stop listening to it or watching it if I see it on YouTube or whatever it is, because every time I pick it up, whether it's in the middle of something or someone's comment, it's always so intriguing and it's compelling, and I can't stop listening unless I actually have to do some work or something. But anyway, on this week's show, we've got the opening of camps. We're going to talk about the new managers. We're going to talk about Samurai Japan and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, so no guest this week, although we did try, I promise you, we tried. But I had a listener last year send us a message in which he said he prefers it when Jim and I just go back and forth. So here we're going to go. We're going to go back and forth on.
There's going to be plenty of that.
There always is, unscheduled and scheduled. Before we get started, I just wanted to offer another heartfelt thank you to Aaron Guile, Dan Evans, and Trey Hillman for our previous episode, our panel discussion. And like I said, I listened to it at least three times all the way through. I just, like I was saying in the opening, every time I see it and I have a couple minutes, I put it on if I'm, you know, flipping through my phone on YouTube, or I put on the podcast player and I listen to a few more words, and everything is just, it was gold. And I just really enjoyed every single word. And thank you for editing the video, and thank you for doing the recording, and thank you for helping to get all the guys together. I mean, you did help, so it was awesome. I can't wait to do another one.
Yeah, I was helping for once. For once.
Yeah, and I did want to take another moment and just kind of wrap up what we heard, because I again, and thanks a million or a billion, I suppose, in yen to our three guests, but we had such awesome material. I think Cornfield Dan is what I started calling him.
He was just, wow.
He was just incredibly informative. And then Trey was brilliantly insightful. And I love the response when I asked him about the draft. And then Aaron gave us some real context to chew on as far as, you know, the draft and what players are thinking. That was, you know, inside the locker room kind of thing. And you, Jim, you added your usual excellent commentary with the kind of depth and, you know, decades of covering MPB games gives you. So it was just awesome. I'm tickled to death about that episode. I really liked it. And guess what? My dad even watched it on YouTube, and he, you know, I grabbed his iPhone the last time I was home, and I subscribed to our podcast, but he didn't listen to it.
Dad, come on, Dad.
I know, but he said he saw the YouTube link, and so he clicked on it and he watched the whole thing, and then wow, he gave his feedback on it too. So that was how awesome it was. It kept him gripped to it for the entire almost 2 hours. So
okay, really, so awesome. So panel discussions and Boomer Wells. I mean, I can't be more in agreement with that. I'm trying to get Boomer, and he's going like, yep, let's do it, yep. Where'd you go, Boomer?
Yeah.
Once he gets started, though, there is no stopping him. He's unstoppable.
Well, we will try to get, especially for next episode, and that should be in a couple weeks, and probably a couple weeks after that. And then, just to let you guys know and inform you, with the WBC, things are going to be tricky and complicated as we try to do the preview shows that we usually do. But we are planning to do them. If we have to record them early and then release them later on, we'll do that. But we will find a way to get it done amid all the baseball that's going to be going on with spring games and WBC warm-up games and then WBC games and then more spring games. And then sounds like a lot of baseball in our
future. Although I'm hopeful. I've seen a little bit of encouragement from spring training that the teams are opening up to fans, but they're also being a little less draconian with the reporters. So that is, it might just be the Giants. I've only heard from one of our Giants beat writers in the day job, but it has been since the camp of 2020 that reporters have been able, it hasn't been since then. That was the last time, February 2020, when reporters were able to walk up and talk to players.
Right.
So the teams have controlled that entire process since, and there was no word that it's changing, but they're going to have a hard time keeping it up. I mean, they're planning, the Giants have announced they will allow vocal cheering at Tokyo Dome,
mm-hmm.
Anywhere in the stadium with, you know, full capacity. And so with those, putting those things together, I think the Giants are going to be sort of at least the leaders on that. And I'm hopeful that the WBC will allow reporters on the field talk with free access to players, or at least marginal access to players, because the WBC, when they get with the national team, some sort of muscles tighten up so much that things don't move very smoothly. And I think there may be some tightening up going on around the WBC as usual. And they don't want, you know, let's not talk, let's not be normal. So we'll see.
Let's not be normal.
But I'll be there, and hopefully we'll have some sound bites from players from the Tigers and Buffaloes who will be playing Japan and Korea in Osaka on March 6th and 7th.
Okay. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. It suffice to say, we're going to be busy. Jim is going to be extremely busy, and March is the time of the fiscal year ending and the new fiscal year beginning, and life changing in Japan in terms of people who have children and who are going to start elementary school. So there's a lot going on in life, but we will do what is Jim and John Lee possible.
John Lee. That's better
than
Big.
Jim Lee and John Lee.
That's better than Big Lee.
Anyway, let's talk about camps. Camps opened on time on February 1st this week. It was Wednesday. Yes, it's freezing outside here in Tokyo, and guys are on the chilly side, I think, in Okinawa and some in Miyazaki. But yeah, I saw some guys in short pants and short sleeves, so not that chilly. I guess it's just me. Anyway, I wish I were down there with them, but things are too hectic here with the family, so I'm sticking it out here in Tokyo now. Yes.
Did you see that there are only 11 teams opened on February 1st as usual?
I did not notice that.
The Cebu Lions, and this is sort of a mystery. So the WBC is affecting all 12 teams.
Mm-hmm. Which it normally does.
Which, depending on whether Hiromitsu Ochiai is managing or not.
Hashtag high heat.
No. We're good. Anyway, but the Cebu Lions decided to open their spring, February 1st camp on February 6th. And as if it was too cold, you know, in case it might have been too cold in the very southern tip of Miyazaki in Nango, where they work out in the far reaches of Miyazaki, the southernmost part of Miyazaki, they've been training up at Cebu.
Yes,
which is like, I'm sure the players love that. Let's be really cold.
Well, I did see Hotaka Yamakawa. That was why I said in shorts, because I did see a picture of him today in shorts, and they said it was 5 degrees Celsius, and he's in shorts taking some swings. And I'm thinking, and it did say Tokorozawa, and I'm like, yeah, that is not that is not cool, bro. It's cold out here, man.
I know. He's making a statement. He's saying, I'm from Okinawa, but I'm good in the freezing cold, you know? Okay. Yeah. That's a tough guy. If you're from Okinawa, of course he went to school up north, so maybe that's his thing. Maybe he's acclimatized.
Yeah. He's looking Okinawa, but he's feeling Tokorozawa because it was cold up there.
Wow.
So, these teams are starting to work out toward the season. And I looked over, I did record a couple of teams, the Hawks and the Carp, their camp workout stuff. And these announcers, I mean, I really have to hand it to them because they have nothing really to talk about except whatever homework they have done. And they have done a lot of homework before these things open because there's really no action going on. There's guys stretching. I mean, they do a lot of work, but I listened, got some notes on some of the teams. But I looked at these rosters and these guys coming in, and I just try to, I daydream about who the rookies are going to be, who have some success, who are the second year guys who are going to make a jump, who are some of the veteran guys who are going to start fast or start slow or fade away. And who are the crop of second year managers, which one is going to have better results than last year because they didn't have great results last year. Particularly Tsuyoshi Shinjo and Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, the Fighters and Dragons managers respectively. And, you know, I look at all the efforts and all these things that these players do getting ready for camp and then at camp, but it still doesn't help them win rundowns. You can work as hard as you want, but it doesn't seem like the rundowns are going to get better. But I know that they say, that's why we have spring training and we work on that in camp. I'm like,
they work on not getting it right in camp?
Exactly.
it's good that you mentioned that because I was combing through the manager's comments from January 31st. I'm going ahead to the past.
Really back to the future, yeah.
Or the opposite, yeah. So anyway, on January 31st, I was looking at managers' comments, and at least two of them said the managers pretty much say the same thing. You know, we're gonna, aim for to win the pennant, and we're gonna work on making sure we don't miss signs, and also on defense. Whether it's base running or. Offense or defense, we're going to make sure we know what we're doing, essentially. We're going to work on relay plays. And I'm going, yeah, like, what's new? There's nothing new. This is what they say every year. And I think that's probably my biggest thing about camp. It's almost like the managers are when they have a manager's meeting, that they hand them a booklet. You know, it's like the little red book from Chairman Mao. These are the things you say on January 31st. We're going to work on relay plays and sign plays, and we're going to be ready for the start of the season.
And sell it. Sell it hard. Make sure the press believes you.
There were a few diversions, but none bigger than Tsuyoshi Shinjo, who has proven that if you don't have any core principles, changing course is no big problem.
That's right.
Because last year he came out and declared to the world that he, as a player, he would never say, I'm trying to win a pennant, until they were in pennant contention at the end of the season, in September.
Right.
Okay. Or, the end of August. You know, he said, that's just not the way baseball works. You just play game, you work on the game. And when you get independent contention, you're in contention. And then you give it that little extra boost. Well, that life lesson apparently evaporated because
bye-bye,
he said,
core value.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. If you, again, if you don't, if that's really, if you don't have a core value, then it's no problem just ditching it in favor of, I spent the whole winter agonizing and thinking how important it was to win, and we're going to aim for the championship, and we want to go 50-0 to start the season.
Yeah, it's sort of like the little kid who was basically Dennis the Menace, who got pulled into the principal's office and his parents were already there and they all sat him down and said, you know, you're not in junior high school anymore. You're about to graduate from high school and we're going to kick you out of the house. So you got to get a job or go to college. And the guy did some thinking and some soul searching and he's like, okay, well, I'm going to change my name. Don't call me Big Boss anymore. Call me by my proper name. I'm going to graduate from college and I'm going to get a job. You know, he's just changed it.
Could be. Yeah, you do wonder how much of this was
intervention.
I'm not thinking invention. Intervention is possible. Intervention. Yeah, but on the other hand, you would have to be, I can't believe Tsuyoshi Shinjo is so unaware that he didn't realize.
Why not? There are so many other people out there who are so unaware. Why can't he be one?
Well, no, I mean, but it was obvious that, I mean, when you're unaware like everybody else, when you're doing the same thing as everybody else and you're in a coma, you don't notice that you're in a coma, you know. But for Shinjo, who was doing everything differently, It had to seem painfully obvious that if you're doing everything differently and people are making fun of you, well, half the people are making fun of you and the other half are too busy kissing parts of your anatomy to do anything else.
Or the other teams that are just beating you and laughing as they walk away with W.
Indeed. Yeah. And you know, you're seeing surveys about how amateur draft prospects don't want to play for the Fighters because they think the team is about Shinjo. They're not serious about winning, and you're going to get on the team and you'll be on the farm tomorrow because he wants to look at somebody else, or he wants to give. He's got a stunt planned for some other player who he wants to be a celebrity pitcher.
Right.
You know. So. I think those things, I don't know if it was the Fighters who said, look, let's get serious because, well, maybe they had enough, or, you know, the general manager, Atsunori Inaba, is a very serious guy, a soft-spoken guy, but very serious too. And I know Shinjo really respects him.
Mm-hmm.
And it may have been a first year kind of thing. Let's see how this works. And the team says, you do what you want. And of course, that didn't last either, because about a month into the season, obviously what you want to do with the bullpen doesn't make any sense. So we're going to take that part of job away from you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it might've been an intervention, but I think also to some degree, he can't be so self-unaware that he didn't realize things needed to change.
Well, you say he can't be. I say he most certainly can.
Okay.
Drugs do that to people. But anyway.
Okay. It's possible. It's possible that this is, you know, this is somebody else telling him, okay, you know, as you said, straighten up and fly right.
Intervention, baby.
It could have been.
Organizational intervention.
I mean, I certainly did consider that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the new skippers and make a seamless transition here. And I don't know. I was going to ask you a question, but I see that we're already 20 minutes in. So,
well, make it quick and I'll say it and I'll make it.
Make it quicky jokes. I can make it quick, dude. But we've got Kazuo Matsui, the Seibu manager. We have Akinobu Okada, the Hanshin manager, who's not really new, but he's new in that he is back with the team for another stint. We have Takahiro Arai of the Carp, and we have Masato Yoshii of the Lotte Marines. And I'm looking at this group of guys and thinking, okay, this is a real mixed lot of managerial soup here that we have.
Right.
They're all so vastly different. So I'm just wondering, who do you most want to see, and what are the expectations for that particular manager?
Wow.
Of these four? Yeah.
I would think
my questions are not quickly answered.
I'll say Arai. No, I think nobody has any expectations of him. He's never been a coach before. He's never shown any great managerial looking.
Acumen?
Yeah, he hasn't looked like a guy who'd be a manager. You know, he's not. You know, okay, so he doesn't look like your Hiromitsu Ochiai or Hideki Kuriyama, people who you might think could just start managing right away because they're really smart, you know? Okay. So you don't get that vibe with him. Kazuo Matsui is a pretty smart guy, a pretty studious guy. I don't know.
I mean, wait, you got to answer the question, though.
Which one? I'm thinking the highest expectations.
No, that's not the question.
No, I'm not trying to change. I'm trying to understand the question.
Mike, it's very simple.
Okay.
Who do you most want to see? And what do you think this manager is going to bring to that particular team?
I guess Okada.
Hmm.
Because he's got a team with a ton of talent. And a team that is, you know, everyone's always going, well, you know, how come the Tigers are to this or to that? So here's a guy who's been there. He's done that. He's won. He won one pennant with the Tigers, which, you know, how many managers can say they won a pennant with the Tigers? Not too many. And I actually like him quite a lot. I'm very fond of him. I think he's a straight shooter. He knows what he's doing. Yoshii didn't want to be manager. He was told he was going to. Lotte knew that Ito was going to quit, which is kind of an indictment of Lotte that the manager felt uncomfortable telling people he was going to quit because he was afraid they might try to talk him out of it.
Well,
that he announced it. Yeah, nobody knew.
I don't know if it's more of a reflection of the organization or his personality.
There's concern there for me. Kazuo Matsui, this was part of a plan. I like that. I like hiring the minor league manager.
You're essentially touching on all the managers, and I want.
Yeah, but my guy, yeah, my guy is Okada. I think he's going to be the big dynamic changer.
Okay, all right. For me, I'll answer my own question, and it is Takahiro Arai for me because I love him.
Yeah, I do too. I'm very fond of him.
He's a great guy. I think he's going to be very calm. He's going to be very. He's going to be an easy communicator. You get this job done, or I will get the next guy. It is going to be really simple, and I think he's going to have a vision. Now, I don't know if it's going to work or not. We don't know that. We never know. But I think he's going to have vision. He's going to have a plan of attack, and I'm excited to watch him try to execute this.
I hope so.
Yeah, because I think that's the kind of player he was. And I think that is going to translate to what he does with his team. You know, remember we talked a long time ago and I said, well, maybe because Arai had such a long career. And I said, well, if you start to put guys on a training regimen and an eating regimen and you take care of their bodies and you do all the things that you're supposed to do to help players recover and then have success. And then you have strategy meetings and you plan everything out that a guy can play longer than other guys because he might have been a little bit stronger. He might have had a better body that is going to hold up over all that, all the rigors of decades of baseball. And I think he's going to put everything into the way the team is going to approach games, approach planning, and I think from A to Z, he's going to have everything covered because that's the way he was to me as a player. He was a thinking man's player as well as a physical, he had the physical ability, but he was able to play so long because he could think his way through situations as well. So I just think he's going to have a multi-pronged attack to cover everything. Now, what I'm most interested in with him is just watching to see how he handles these pitching, the pitching situations, because I don't think it just seems to me that, you know, players or non-pitchers start thinking, well, he's giving up hits or he's giving up contact. We got to get him out. And that's not always the case. But I'm interested to see about that. So as terms of Okada, I don't know if you saw this on TV, but he had his opening speech to the team and he wouldn't even utter the word pennant or league championship.
Shinjo Senior.
He kept referring to it. I guess the English equivalent would be something close to that thing, the thing that we're all trying to do. And he kept calling. I mean, there were 9 or 10 references, I believe, in his little opening speech about it, and kept saying that thing. We know what the goal is. It's that thing. So they essentially come out the first day and they can't even say what they want to do. So I'm already turned off by that. And yes, he has been there. He has done that in the Kansai area. I think all the criticism will just wash away and wash off on him, and he'll have his plan and everything. I just don't know that that's going to work again, but obviously we're going to see. But I think we've seen this party before, and everybody gets drunk and there's a lot of vomit.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, I hope Arai does work out, because I also like him. In fact, all these guys are people I respect a ton.
Yes.
And sure. So it's really going to be interesting. I see, you know, the thing with Yoshi is he's a real smart guy, and, you know, sometimes that works and sometimes he doesn't. You know, sometimes managers are too smart for their own good.
True.
So we'll see. But I hope he succeeds. I love his brand of humanism and his, you know, what he brings to the game. He's very much Arai, I don't know, but Yoshi is very much in line with the Takatsu, Shingo Takatsu, Satoshi Nakajima, Akihiro Yano type of manager. I mean, Okada wasn't, but I think he's got that kind of, you know, he's got that ability to switch that, because, well, his best ability is that, you know, as I said, he doesn't really care what the Hanshin beat writers want. It's not really part of his program. He's fine without them, which Yano was too. I mean, it took him, when Okada quit, they went through 3 managers before they found one who was impervious to the media. Now he left because he had better things to do than to put up with the Tigers beat writers. So Kazuo Omatsu is very soft spoken and a very, I don't know if he communicates well or not. I mean, I've talked with him and I find him to be really intriguing and a really smart guy. But I don't know if he's a good communicator or not. When he was a player coach, he said, yeah, I'm a coach, but I'm really not a coach. I don't really know nothing about coaching. I'm here to try and see if I can play.
But that's how you become a coach. But you keep jumping around from manager to manager, and I got comments that I can't. You're killing me here. Going back to Yoshi, I think I know what to expect from him in a lot of situations, because he has been a longtime pitch coach. And I remember sitting down with him, I don't know, 10 years ago or so ago, to talk about the handkerchief prince. And I said, man, this guy he's actually doing well. And Yoshi looked up at me and he said, I know, right?
Hey, he quit his job over the handkerchief. That was when he was with SoftBank, and he quit his job. He quit the fighters over Kuriyama's usage of Yuki Saito.
That was before he quit the first time. So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, this guy really is human, and he really,
oh yeah,
he's not going to pull punches, I think, when there's when it's time to do things, but he's also going to have fun in the process, and he knows it's about the journey too, and I think he's going to enjoy that. So, you know, I think it's going to be steady management of the players. I think we expect steady rotation. I think the lineups aren't going to flip-flop all the time. I think we're just going to get a lot of calm decisions, and I'm not sure if the talent is quite there on the team, but I think I get a general sense of poise, and there's an adult in the room, and it's going to be fun, but it's going to be controlled fun.
And, well, I always had that with Higuchi, that there was an adult in the room. But I also got the thing with Higuchi was he had a little bit of that Hara thing, like, this guy is pretty good, but maybe the guy who's not playing is better.
But yeah, Higuchi always had, for me, he had this vibe of, I'm going to, the exterior is going to show calm, but actually inside my stomach is in knots and I'm angry over this. And sometimes it came out.
Well, he had an edge for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he had that vibe. But Hata, like, you know, doggone it, you know, well, we'll get him tomorrow. You know what I mean? And he isn't he doesn't take that stuff home with him. You know, I don't get the feeling that he has the Giants and it's the biggest, it's the face of Japanese baseball. And yet when he goes home, sleep like a baby, you know, whatever happened.
Well, now, and it took him since 2002. So it only took him 20 years, but he figured out that he can live with the same second baseman every day.
How did I know you were going there?
what were the chances of that? So I think now it'll be what other position. I mean, I guess last year was left field. You know, who's my left fielder? You know, he had to get his app rewritten or something.
Well, that was there, but that was a problem area. I mean, before we were talking about second base when there weren't really problems.
No, it was just like nobody's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, go ahead.
Oh, okay. What you thought was?
Well, I think it was because he so badly wanted to be a second baseman when he was coming out of college. He didn't want to be a third baseman. He wanted to be a second baseman. And then when he wasn't able to play second base, I think he's been pouting about it for 50 years.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, I'm glad you got that comment in. for me with Motsi, you know, yeah, I never really saw him as the managerial type, and I totally get what you're talking about as when you talked about him thinking he'd never coached, and he says, well, I'm not a coach, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, you're going to give advice. You don't have to physically show the players how to do it just to be a coach. I mean, there's a lot of ways to coach. You don't have to be a hands-on guy. So you are a coach, you know, but I am really interested in seeing how he handles everything from media availability to the plethora of mindless questions that the media here in Japan will give you to the game management and the player management.
He's got,
you've been there. You've been in those
He's got his non-answers already. He's got a vast supply of non-answers. He's going to be, you know, what he's going to tell you is he'll make a pitching change and he'll have a reason for it. And if you guess the reason, he'll say some managers might do that. You know, he'll call in, you know, and he'll say, I'm calling about I got a friend who's you'll be on a talk show and he says, I got a friend who's a pro baseball manager. He's got this problem. It's not me.
Well, I want to see how he handles all that stuff, regardless of what he tells us. Because, I mean, you know, and I'm talking about game management, I'm talking about player management. My image of him has always been someone who he won't play guys if they don't work hard, because he was a really hard worker. I think you told the story on the show years ago how he taught himself how to play.
Well, he is shortstop because he was shortstop. Essentially, yeah, he was mostly a high school pitcher. Mm-hmm. And then he played some infield, but they signed the Lions drafted him as an infielder and then taught him how to play shortstop and taught him how to switch hit.
Yeah, and he was such a great athlete. And but you know how you do that. You know how you do anything like that. A lot of hard work. And I think if he doesn't see players working hard, that he will make changes and or he won't play them.
Yeah,
or he'll get other guys in there. He has to get rid of
this guy. He is no nonsense. I'll say that. And nobody, I think, and certainly nobody's going to work harder than him. I think we saw that in his last couple of years. But he's also, he's open. I'm excited. I'm excited. I haven't talked to him since before he retired, so because of the corona. So I'm excited.
Yeah, and I also think guys need to have to really understand the nuances of the game. And I think those are the kinds of guys he's going to put out there and run out there on a regular basis. But
and then find out that they really don't know the nuances.
Well, but he's going to be teaching all along.
I hope so.
He thinks he's coaching or not. So, yeah. It'll happen.
Well, the coaches can do that stuff. I mean, that was the thing. You know, Shinjo said something quite smart.
He's so surprised.
Accidents happen. I jest about that because he says a lot of things that slip through the cracks that are actually quite smart. They just run through the, you know, they sound silly in the context of Japanese baseball, but I think they're very commonsensical.
Well, yeah, it's hard to take it serious if you're wearing a clown suit. I mean,
true enough. Well, you know, he took his red nose off for a minute and he was.
The ears are still big, bro.
he said, you know, the coaches are so smart and they know so much what's going on. I'm going to learn a lot this year. And he says, and I'm going to let them, you know, teach me what they can do. And I thought, wow, that is really that's very big of him. And
that's
but for him, I thought, wow, that is so, you know, let you know, that was, but that's what he, although Hiromitsu Ochiai's thing was that he's bigger than life. You know, I'm as a better player than any of you guys. I was a better hitter than any of you guys. I was a better pitcher than most of you guys. But his thing with his players and his coaches was the coach is going to coach, the player is going to play, and if I don't like it, I'll just kick their butts back to the farm team. But basically, it's up to you guys to figure things out, so go do it. And Shinjo's more or less taking it, and I don't ever want to, if I ever say Ochiai and Shinjo in the same sentence again, you can shoot me. But
no.
But that was a little bit of what he said, you know. I'm going to let the coaches do their thing and expect the players to do their thing. And well, good luck. Good luck to him and good luck to all the guys.
All right. And with that, we'll make a four-seam transition and talk about the Samurai guys. So Samurai Japan is going to be playing in the WBC, which starts March 9th. Here in Tokyo, and Jim's going to be out at some of the games and out at the park and having a good old time.
Gay old time.
Now, we had spoken, I believe, on a previous show sometime. Maybe it was winter. Maybe it was the first show. I don't remember anymore. But we talked about Samurai Japan and that they were going to have a stacked team. And I think we talked about the first crop of players who were going to be on the roster and that included some huge names such as Shohei Ohtani, Yu Darvish, and some other guys coming back or before they start their big league careers they're going to be playing. We also talked about MPB's biggest stars, Munetaka Murakami, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and I think the expectations are pretty high. And I think we have to understand that it's a lot about who's in form at the time of the competition and who's that can be closest to full strength. And when the balls start flying, who can get hot and make plays. I don't think it's really always about who, you know, what team is best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Japan has had some really good teams when we look at Olympic competition and some other international competition. And I think you and I mentioned it on the show years ago. We said, well, Japan was stacked for this particular competition and lost and had really great players for this competition and couldn't get it done. And I think that's part of it, just, you know, getting ready, being in form at the time that these competitions go off. So I know that Japan normally gets ready early, and I think that has been an advantage for Japan mm-hmm. in this WBC competition throughout the years. But I don't know what the U.S. is how serious the U.S. is taking this. And the U.S. won last time without elite players all over the place. And I think there are going to be some, if not elite, more elite players on the roster.
Yep.
There are going to be some players who I think other countries are excited to have in the competition.
Sure.
Including Mike Trout. We've heard that Mike Trout wants to
Mookie
play.
Mookie Betts.
Yeah, so we've got some talent on this U.S. team. So, if Japan doesn't win, I don't think it's the worst thing ever. But I do think Japan is going to bring, perhaps since that first WBC team and first championship team, is going to have its best roster. Although the one crack I'm sensing, and I don't know if it's just me, but I'm thinking with the pitchers we talked about, Ohtani and Darvish, and we've talked about Noki Sasaki and Yamamoto, the starting pitch is going to be really good. I think the strategy for other teams is just going to be to make these guys pitch, get them, get that pitch count up toward the limit, and then get into the bullpen, whoever that is. And whoever it is going to be a step down from these guys, you would think.
I like all the relievers.
But they're not this level. I mean,
No, they're not quite, but there were a couple of people who basically said they wanted to play in WBC, Yasuaki Yamasaki and Masahiro Tanaka, and they've decided since then to focus on spring training.
Yeah. I think they looked around the room. I mean, these guys are good.
Yeah. Atsuki Iwasa, actually when I saw his name, I thought, well, there's another closer. Okay, he isn't a closer, but he's a pitcher I'd love to have as a closer.
Okay.
I love his fastball. It's one of my favorite fastballs in Japan. And this is another thing that I love about this team. They've got, and the other guy whose fastball is my favorite and my favorite left-handed fastball in Japan is Keiji Takahashi of the Swallows. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I think that's a pitch that's really, really, really going to play. But I agree with you. They've got 10 starters and 5 relievers. And so the plan is, I think it looks, I want to say it's obvious, but I never want to say that with Kuriyama because he'll do something weird. And we'll see if Masato Yoshi quits the Japan team before the start of the tournament because Kuriyama wants to do again.
And he can't bring out Yuki Saito because he retired.
So. No, he can't, and he probably won't go with an opener either. So moving along, I think that what it looks like is that, the plan will be to go with 2 starting pitchers, one guy to go 3 to 4 innings, another guy to go 3 to 4 innings, and then leave it to the bullpen. And of course, they're going to have tiebreakers. You don't have to worry about like 15 inning games.
That's good.
It is what it is. As far as the best team, I think this is Japan's best team. The 2009 team was awfully good. And that team was similar to this in that it had a core of MLB players. And even the 2006 team had a small core. It had Akira Utsukan, it had Ichiro Suzuki. And there were a few more in 2009. And I think that's really the thing. Is what happened was after 2009, Japan lost the plot early on, and they didn't. It was so disorganized, and they never figured out how to do it after the disaster of 2013, which was they hired a manager who had no credentials. Basically, had no business managing, but he was the only guy they could get.
Right.
And when all the MLB players saw oh, they got Koji Yamamoto, who pretty much everybody agrees won one pennant because his head coach was really good and didn't do anything after that and annoyed a lot of players and caused them to leave. And so nobody really wanted to play for him. They thought, if Japan can't do better than Koji Yamamoto, why would I waste my time?
Sure.
And so Samurai Japan became a company after that. They got a company, they got the sponsorship, they got the players together, they tried hiring a manager. They failed badly with Hiroki Kokubo, and that's all Sadahara Oh's fault. Sorry, boss, I love you, but that was a dumb choice. And nobody wanted to play for Hiroki Kokubo either because he didn't know what he was doing. Atsunori Inaba was a great choice. He didn't manage because of the pandemic, and Kurihara is a great choice. And when they got a good choice and they're organized, this is what they're going to get. They're going to get MLB players who want to play for the team. And the other thing is, of course, among MLB players, a lot of them grew up with the WBC because the first one was 17 years ago.
Wow.
So these kids were in junior high school, and these guys were in junior high school and high school watching it. Some were elementary school, and they grew up with it. And that's where it is now. And I think it's going to be exciting. But having the core of, I mean, when Japan won in 2006 and 2000, wasn't the MLB players who won the tournament, but they provided that core of talent, that sort of core of unflappability. That they belong there. And the Japanese stars carried the load. And I think that's what's going to happen. These guys are going to grow up really fast. And there are some tremendous talent on the Japanese team. I think they're going to make it, although it's going to be hard because they're going to have a quarterfinal. They could have a quarterfinal against a Cuba roster that's got a lot of MLB talent.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be another exciting tournament. I just wish it didn't overlap with the NPB schedule the way it does, but we will fight through the challenges as we go through and try to get through the preseason to get to the start of the season. But I'm excited about this. It should be fun. And again, there's a lot of depth with this Japanese team, and even the players who are not yet in the major leagues are almost shoo-ins to be major league players, Murakami, Sasaki as well. So it's just going to be a stacked team. But again, it depends on who can put get into form, get into mid-season form the fastest, and not even mid-season form, but the best form, better form than.
Yeah, but Japan, like in the first two tournaments when Japan and Korea were really Korea was really the star since they won the most games the first two tournaments. But Japan and Korea really had an edge because they are so used to playing high-quality baseball in the middle of March.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But everybody, it is going to be so exciting. Wish it weren't in Miami, but, nobody asked me.
Isn't it funny how they don't ask us these things? Doggone it.
I know.
We're right
Jim
here.
Small. Come on, dude. Miami. I'm on
We're
San
on
Diego.
Twitter.
San Diego.
You have a blog.
Great.
I have a blog. You have a homepage, a website. We've got the podcast. We've got email. We've got
San
Twitter.
Diego.
I mean, come on, guys. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this one came to us a little while back. It's from Mike in Pennsylvania via email. Jim's laughing in the background, but I'm not going to read it all. I had to edit it, Mike, because it was a little bit long. But he said, basically, since it was the offseason, it was a good time to see if I could sneak in a pair of questions, one non-baseball themed and the other on topic. First, the on-topic question. One of my favorite baseball movies is the Immortal 1992 film Mr. Baseball starring Tom Selleck. My question is, how on the mark do you feel this movie gets to Japanese baseball at the time? What hits the mark, misses, or is just exaggerated? And Mike said he had a couple questions, but he actually has like four. So let's stop here and address this one first, Jim.
Well, I think I don't want to go with where it misses. I think probably the biggest miss is that foreign players aren't typically in the taking baths with their manager's daughters.
You think?
Yeah,
don't know.
I don't know. Although I know I know a couple of players, it wasn't for want of trying.
No, we heard stories about players.
Yeah, we have indeed.
Had the parts of their anatomy and
yeah, let's not. Oh, let's stop. Okay. And none of those stories. I hope none of those stories involve somebody walking their dog.
Yes, okay. That player in particular. Okay. Yeah, you know.
Come on, I'm trying not to be. I'm probably blushing. Okay, now, I think the movie has some great lines, and of course, Leon Lee. We had the comment. I don't remember if it was in a podcast where Leon Lee said what his brother told him, the line that ended up in Mr. Baseball. I guess it was on my website in a live event. Leon Lee, somebody asked Leon Lee if he ever got any, ever had any issues with his brother being a teammate. He says, well, we were brothers and we were very supportive, but yeah, there was always a little thing going. There was sometimes a little thing going on. And Leon, in that wonderful, wonderful voice of his that I can only dream of mimicking, said, like, stop trying to hit not to miss. You're swinging not to miss and not to hit. You're not swinging to hit, you're swinging not to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that line, as read by the guy who does the insurance commercials.
Dennis
something or other.
Yeah, I know his name. Dennis Haysbert.
Hayes Burton, yeah, it was on 24th President of the United States on one show. So he 24. Was, he had the sort of the Leon Lee role as the veteran Japanese, veteran foreign player. And he used that, you're swinging not to miss, you're not swinging to hit. So that, but I thought the movie really, really captured the spirit of the atmosphere of the ball games. And I thought I loved that. And it captured bits of the culture, the way things are. And I think, and thanks to Bob Whiting, because when they were filming it, everybody on the set apparently had a copy of You've Got to Have Wah. And when Whiting's lawyer found out about it, he got some hundreds of thousands of dollars as an indemnity against them using stuff from his book, just in case.
Right. So
a lot of the goods, basically all the good stuff in that came from Leon Lee, and of course Animal the late great Brad Leslie was in the movie, and I think Boomer Wells had a scene as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch the movie again here, but for me, I guess I'm gonna be you, and I'm gonna give a number. I think it was about 70% on point. A few things bothered me about the movie. One, a manager speaking English that fluently in Japan is an absolute joke. I haven't met one who could put really a sentence together or more than a few words, so that's really not realistic. And then, as you talked about the Dennis Haysbert character, the Allstate commercial guy. And he was also in 24, Tom Selleck's teammate saying he left the States to get away from players who were selfish, like Selleck's character. I thought that was ludicrous because at the time, no one was dodging selfish players to come and play in the sweltering heat of Japan, especially at Nagoya Stadium, as hot as it was out there. So I thought that was not realistic in that sense, but those are really minor issues. I think, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the one thing I loved was, although Ken Takakura spoke English, he did a wonderful job of bringing that Senichi Hoshino vibe to the Dragons.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, he has that. He had the look down, and I love.
Wasn't Takagi the manager at that time, though?
Well, yeah, Takagi was the manager, but everybody, you know, you when you saw Ken Takakura in a Dragon's uniform, you had to think of Sinchon. So.
I did. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Another thing that bothered me, a couple things about the daughter of the manager. I forgot her name in the movie even, but
Hiroko.
Hiroko, okay, I thought it was, but I wasn't going to guess. There were no tall buildings. There wasn't really a skyline in Nagoya. So at the time that movie was filmed, they had no doubt had gone to either Tokyo or Osaka to film some of those office building scenes where you can see buildings or a skyline in the background. So I knew that wasn't Nagoya, but that's just because I lived there. And, you know, little tiny things. But in terms of the baseball and the atmosphere and the crowd scenes and all that, I think I mentioned on the show before, I was living in Nagoya at the time, and I could have gone to the stadium to be an extra. But I think it was a little too cold for me at the time because they had this film in the off season, and I didn't want to go out. And I also worked a little bit late into the evening, so I couldn't get there at the time they wanted people, because I think they wanted people at the beginning of, you know, that dusk kind of feeling to simulate the start of a game, and then nighttime to simulate the end of the game. So, but those things kind of threw me off, but I would say 70% that the movie is on point. So Mike's next question is, do you in general enjoy movies yourselves, or do you have any other movies, English or not, that you feel are good or are a good watch for Japanese baseball fans?
I can't think of any. I've never watched a Japanese baseball movie. They tend to be pretty corny.
Corny, goofy.
Yeah, slappy, corny, slappy, smarmy.
Fake. Yeah, they're not.
I haven't seen them. They're usually about, I would say most of the baseball movies in Japan are about tragic ends of players who were amateurs who died in the war. I would say that's
blew out their shoulders and couldn't play and became a water boy or something.
Pretty much.
Tragedies, they're corny.
If they were documentaries, they would be high school players who blew out their shoulders as pitchers and became trainers. Ask any trainer, and he'll, you know, whenever you get a physical therapy in Japan, you say, "What sport ruined your body?" And they'll tell you.
So yeah, I've tried. I think there were a couple that came on TV. I've tried to watch them, and they are just, it's not a language thing. I don't understand every single word that's being spoken all the time, but it's just like Jim said, there's a challenge. There's another hurdle out there, not the language one. It's the one that you're trying to get through with, like, that's not real. You know, that doesn't happen. Those are not real people. Those are not real characters. So no, I do not, but any baseball movie I will watch, you know,
that sounds like a challenge.
Other side to that is I will watch any baseball movie. So all the ones that, the only thing I could think of, I don't know how old you are, Mike, but there was a movie called Stealing Home a long time ago. And I thought, and that was also filmed in my sort of hometown at the time. It was filmed part of it in San Bernardino, California. And The Slugger's Wife, For the Love of the Game. Those are some of the movies I like. But Japanese movies, I'm not going near any of them.
I'm not an aficionado, I'm afraid. I would love to see a good one, but I haven't yet.
Yep. And then Mike says, my second question has nothing to do with baseball, but does involve Japanese culture. In the last few years, I have become a huge fan of mystery novels, going right through all the big names like Conan Doyle, Agatha Christie, and others. However, recently, based off a recommendation, I read the classic The Dekagon House Murders, I hope that's the right pronunciation, by Yukiko Hayatsuji, and was hooked. And I'm now speeding through the sadly only 4 translated works of Seishi Yokomizu. Also, any tips on learning Japanese would be appreciated. Would learning to read be easier, or speaking? So He says, thanks for your attention. Love the pod, the newsletter, and everything you guys do. You have been invaluable as I slowly immerse myself into this area of the baseball world. Mike, I can tell you that I've got 6-year-old twins. I don't have time to read anything. I have barely enough time to read the articles that I have get paid to read at work. So, and I didn't read much before they were born. I'm more of a creator than anything else. I don't really read that much. And I'm spending most of my time, the free time, trying to work out and stay somewhat thin, not as thin as Jim. Jim's doing a great job. Anyway, I'll watch TV before I go to sleep. And as far as studying Japanese, that's how I do it, is watching a lot of TV, listening to the radio. I think radio is the best way because you don't have the video footage there in front of you. So you really have to concentrate. And I would say the best thing to do is find something that you like on YouTube in Japanese, whether it's like, for instance, golf, photography, science, origami, anything that doesn't make you feel like you're studying, and then watch that maybe 10 minutes a day with a dictionary and get a grammar book, because I'm self-taught Japanese. So get a grammar book and figure out how to put the structures together. Then the more you listen, the more vocabulary you get. The more vocabulary you get, the more grammar you understand. The more grammar you understand, the better your comprehension is, and then you'll be able to speak. As far as picking up new words and structures and all that stuff, like I said, the radio is excellent because you hear Japanese as it is delivered, not as it is to help Japanese learners. And that's the biggest thing with our learning of foreign languages in the United States, is they get people to slow down and enunciate and use language that no one uses in the real world. So when you study from a book and you study from listening tapes and you go out into the actual world or you watch a TV show, you can't understand anything because no one speaks that way. So like I said, I'm self-taught mostly from radio and TV, and that's how I suggest you learn. And YouTube makes it easy, so you can find some person who has a hobby that's similar to yours, and you can pursue that. And like I said, it doesn't feel like studying. Jim.
Well, I'm not self-taught for the most part. So my experience is really different. I had lots of lessons in university, and then I came to Japan, and I certainly understood, you know, learner is unique.
Sure.
But I would say the thing I would say in 100% agreement with John is find something that you're really interested in. And I've seen this with English language learners in Japan. The best English language learners I've met in Japan are people who, as young adults, became absolutely obsessed with, for example, Western movies or Western music, and began digging into them. And, you know, what are they saying? What are they writing? Who are these people? What, you know, what's the background of this movie? What's the point of this kind of dialogue? What's the point of these kind of lyrics? What's the point of this kind of music? You know, if you're into the music, you know, read what they are saying, listen to what they are saying. Pick up what you can, learn what you can. Don't worry too much about what you can't understand, as grasp onto things you can, and more you'll be able to grasp. Little by little, words will start to have some meaning to you. My reading, I don't know if my reading is better than my speaking, probably.
Yeah, he asked the question, is reading...
I don't know. It depends on you.
Yeah, learning to read or easier or speaking. And I say that there are two aspects to this. Well, sure. There are two aspects to this. Reading, the words never change. You know, if you write something one way, you always write it that way. But speaking fluctuates all the time. Sometimes people use a different tenor, a different nuance.
True.
Those things make speaking difficult when you're trying to repeat that. But again, just like Jim said, it depends on you. And also with Japanese, there are times when I read a sentence, I'm at work or something, and I read the sentence, I can read all the kanji, I understand the grammar, but I have no idea what they're actually trying to say.
It happens. And it happens sometimes because it can be
mysterious. Yeah.
Yeah. Also because, I resumed taking Japanese lessons last year, and I have a private lesson every week for the last year and a half, and almost 2 years now. And what's different has been, or one thing that happens is sometimes we go through texts, we go through vocabulary, and I'll say this sentence makes no sense to me, and I'll have a completely wrong interpretation of it. She said, my teacher says, oh, that's because when I read it, when she reads it, I understand it because she knows how the intonation for this sentence goes.
Right, when
she said, if you use these words, it's going to sound like this and not like you think it's going to sound. And as soon as she said that, I heard somebody saying it and I heard the intonation and I realized it was a question and not an assertion. And so things like that. So yeah, so basically, do what work, and I'll give the same advice to you that I give to people who are trying to build muscle or lose weight. Do what you can keep doing. Do something you're comfortable with that you can keep at, because even if it's really, really good and really, really useful, if it's too much work or it's too difficult or it's not interesting enough, you're not going to keep it up. You want to find things that are challenging and interesting and doable. So go for it.
And it's just like work. People always say, if you like what you do at work, you won't work a day in your life. And that's why I always tell people, pursue whatever it is that you have an affinity for, because that will help you stay linked to whatever it is you're learning. And you know,
I thought you were going to say be like Jim and don't work a day in your life.
Missed that opportunity for some reason. But you do great work though. You work a lot. especially when you get when these numbers tickle you and you dig into them all day. Waste a whole day. But anyway, we could talk about studying for forever. It's fun. I always found it to be a challenge. I still do. And when I ask my wife questions, I get the funniest looks because I ask her questions about things she has never in her life once considered were a mystery in Japanese. It's just natural to her. So she can't answer them.
I hear you. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, awesome question, Mike. Please write.
And thank you for the kind words.
And thank you for waiting. Yeah. So just to give you guys an idea about the schedule, we'll probably be back in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So that would be the 20th of February. And then after that, I don't know exactly when we're going to have shows. And again, don't know exactly what we're going to do with the preview shows that we usually do, but we are going to try to do YouTube for the preview shows. Hopefully we'll have to see how that goes as well. But I would like to do that because it looks like we got a lot of plays on YouTube and that was a really fun show. So maybe the previews would be nice for YouTube early on. And then we have to figure out the rest of the schedule with the WBC and the start of the season, but we will figure it out and probably start going weekly after Jim gets back from the WBC. So look for us then. We will talk to you next time. Enjoy your off season.
See you at the preseason ballparks, everyone.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag high heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.